Hello?
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to our show, Small Steps to Big Changes. For the next hour, you're going to be with myself, Shiv Paul, and two other very talented life coaches, Dexter Cicero and Mike Jesse. How are you tonight, gentlemen?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Great. So I'm excited about our show today. So we are talking about small steps to big changes. And what does that mean? How can people implement big change in their life while making sustainable small steps? And some examples of people who've done that from our own experiences and around the world. So let's kick off. So a lot of things happening in the news recently with people making a lot of big changes and things like that. In the Netherlands, Queen Beatrix, who now is known as Princess Beatrix, has abdicated in favor of her son. So after 33 years on the throne, she's given that up to him to allow a new generation to leave the country. So that must have been a fairly massive change, not in just her life, but in the life of her son. What do you guys think about that?
Sorry. Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's so easy for some of these monarchs to sort of hold on to, you know, their thrones and their power for so long. But, you know, at some point, it is very, very important for us to pass it on and allow another generation of thought and influence to come in and to do something different, say something different, and be something different for different generations. So I think it's very important. And I'm sure she'll like some, you know, downtime. Not that she doesn't have downtime. But
I'm sure. But that's a fairly sort of common thing that that we guys probably come across, I think, with our clients and people in general do as well, that sort of changing dynamic within a family. You know, changing the roles and the responsibilities and things like that, like, often is not easy, but actually very necessary. Do you guys have some thoughts about that or some examples of how people can make themselves be seen in a new light, perhaps, than how they are seen right now? I mean, I think within our families, we're all sort of, you know, we have a particular role to play. And quite often we grow out of that role. We sort of fight to take on a new role that's in line with the personality we've developed over the years. What do you guys think about how to make that kind of change within a family after such a long period of time?
I think that it's important. I mean, one of the things that's important in society is that we've lost sort of the modern culture is ritual. A sort of, you know, something symbolic saying, okay, now you've gone from, let's say, being a boy to being a man, or being from the sort of caretaker to the elder in the tribe, so to speak. And I think if we had either some ritual or some sort of understanding with that, a verbal understanding that now we've shifted in and these are your new responsibilities and your new roles within the family unit or within the society, I think we could better prepare each person for the next phase in which he or she has to move into.
I think that's a great point. Dexter, what do you, Mike, sorry, what do you think about some kinds of ways that people can institute this kind of change within a relationship dynamic, whether it's in a family or, you know, with a partner, for example?
It's a great question. I think when I'm someone who just was kind of in the middle of a divorce and the tail end of a divorce, separated from my wife, who I was married to for 20 years, and my two children. I have a 18-year-old daughter and a 14-year-old son, two people very, very important in my life. And being separated from them, not necessarily something I wanted, and kind of against your wishes, is a very difficult, kind of life change event. And we all experience them, whether it's, you know, a relationship, let's say a kid going, you know, let's say your child going away to school, or, you know, a divorce or a loss, you know, loss of a loved one, you know, sometimes, you know, these things are obviously life-changing events that we all kind of come in contact with and impact our lives. One of the things that, you know, one of the ways I like to think of things is not necessarily as something that happened that's bad to me and become a victim of the circumstance. What I like to do is I try and find the opportunity of the situation. So I've been separated, in my case, if I could share it, I've been separated from my wife, you know, for over 3, you know, just about 2.5 years now. And, you know, I just basically, at the very early stages, I was a little upset, a little angry, and then you kind of get over that and sort of accept it. And then you start really thinking about, you know, what the opportunities life has to offer you, what was missing from a given relationship or that set of circumstances that you could possibly get in your new life and figuring out how to sort of maintain those relationships and open up, you know, lines of communication between, you know, let's say the person that you're in that relationship with. So this way you both could understand, you know, where you're kind of where you're coming from, what your reference point is to, you know, to oftentimes pull you even closer together. And I would say it's kind of interesting for me because I lived under my roof. Yeah, I lived under the same roof for my kids for their whole lives, obviously. And I would say now that I'm separated from them, I'm closer to them now more than ever because we share our feelings, we open up the lines of communication. So, you know, I think it really boils down to, you know, looking, you know, what's the opportunity? I think if you could, you know, ask yourself, no matter what the circumstance is, no matter what the relationship is, just what's the opportunity in this? What it does is it moves us from being sort of a victim where kind of bad things happen, right, to understanding that things that happen to us are relatively neutral, not really good or bad, but create opportunities for us. And it's whether it's losing a job, a relationship with, you know, whatever it might be, or some level of separation within a relationship. You know, I like to and kind of reframe my life in terms of, you know, asking, you know, what's the opportunity in this situation, and really kind of turns the, you know, perspective on things from, like I said, sort of being a little bit more of a victim to being, you know, more empowering and you know, creating and finding opportunities that could change your life forever.
Right. Yeah, and I love what you said about how, you know, what happens to us is neutral, but, you know, essentially it's the reaction that you have to something which really determines your experience, and there's a choice there, right? You know, you can choose to react to it in any number of ways. But I mean, you know, just from your own experience that you shared with us, and thanks for doing that. I mean, I'm interested to know sort of how did that change start, or like what were the processes or structures that you went through in order to make that happen. So I mean, you know, for example, I work with a lot of clients who are in the process of career transition, and usually what invariably comes out when they want to transfer into a new field, into something different, they have usually been completely overstretched, and what it really comes down to is they want to have more balance in their life. So I'm working with one client at the moment who, you know, doesn't really have a recreational component to her life in terms of exercise and things like that, which has always been a very key component in her life. Mm-hmm. So trying to reinstitute that in her life as part of her daily activities, you know, we've been working on how to do that. And rather than make it a big goal of, you know, running a certain amount of miles every day or every week or something like that, you know, something that's come up for her is the fact that there's no element of play in exercise anymore. Like, you know, when we were, I think we're all of the same generation, when we were kids, we were probably out playing all the time, and, you know, no one forced us to do it, no one told us to do it. That's kind of what you did as kids, you wanted to. And so using, you know, my clients as an example, trying to get that element of play and fun back in this component of recreation and exercise. You know, I'm rather than setting these, you know, huge goals, I just want my client, for example, to wake up at a certain point, you know, that she likes to exercise in the morning. I just want her to wake up and get out of bed at that particular time in the morning for the next week, even if she doesn't do anything, just to kind of, you know, get started and get into the mindset of getting up earlier than she normally does, you know, getting out of bed, feeling refreshed. Whether she actually does anything, it actually doesn't even really matter for the first week. Do you know what I'm saying? So I'm interested to know, like, did you or have you worked with any clients where you set out, you know, really small kind of structures and things in place to help that bigger change, that bigger goal, be more sustainable for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you raise a great point. I think you're doing a great job for your client, because what you're doing is you're establishing baby steps for her with the bigger goal in mind, right? You're kind of giving her, you know, sort of the no-brainer. What's kind of the no-brainer thing I could do to get my to get on that path? So I think you have the that's a great angle to take. I think in my coaching, when I was became certified, we were taught what I think is a very powerful tool. It actually has a name called AIM Smart, and you know the AIM Smart all stand for different parts of the process, but basically, it's the process wants you to create very specific, measurable, and achievable goals, and also put a reasonable time limit on them, and basically put a deadline on when you're going to achieve those goals. And, you know, the thing is that our clients all have the answers. One of the things that, you know, I hope the listeners understand is, you know, what the coaching process does is it really helps. It's really the client's plan. The client has all the answers. So when we think about a process like the AIM Smart, basically the AIM is, what's your ideal set of circumstances? Where do you want to be? In this particular case, it's some level of a workout schedule. What's sort of the middle of the road of where you want to get? And then the most important part, because I think we all have getting started is the hardest part, you know? What's the no-brainer? What can you, as a client, what can you offer up as the no-brainer thing for you to do to get this regimen up and going? And if the client says, hey, if I can wake up at 5:30 in the morning and do absolutely nothing but just get up, to me that's a major accomplishment.
Right.
And that starts the process. And then once they get up 5:30 every morning for a week or two, and that may seem like an obscene hour for some of our callers, and maybe for, you know, other callers,
that's the
right time is 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, whatever it is. Like, we don't really know, because each one of our clients' circumstances are different. But in a circumstance like that, when you're asking your client what's the no-brainer thing that they can do to get things going, they're the ones setting the timeline or the goals for themselves. So as a coach,
yeah,
we're empowering them and basically pulling out of them what they want to do and what a comfortable timeline for them is. And then,
yeah,
as a coach, we're there to hold them accountable to that. Say, okay, can I hold you accountable over the next 2 weeks to wake up at 5:30 every morning? And then how do I hold you accountable? Well, I'll email you when I get up and say, you know, hey, Shiv, I'm up, you know, and great,
yeah.
You know, and then the next coaching session, that becomes the minimum, and then you're striving for, you know, maybe a walk around the block, whatever it is. But
yeah.
Again, it's basically what they're comfortable with, and with the little push from us, right? Because,
right,
you know,
right.
We want to kind of push, you know, set that bar a little bit, you know, maybe a little higher than they're willing to set it, but also not too high where we discourage them. And then, you know, I mean, I have some, you know, personal, you know, circumstances, but I just rather, you know, I think that's sort of like, you know, an overview of sort of,
you know,
the way I like to approach situations like that, because these changes are hard. If people are on the phone or reaching out to a coach, try and make major life changes. These changes are generally not easy, because if they're easy, you would just make them, you know? So the
right approach,
you know?
Yeah. And I want to pick up on two things that you said, actually, which I think are very interesting and pertinent to mention. But, you know, for anyone out there who is listening to us right now who doesn't know much about life coaching and what it is, you know, life coaching is basically where, to paraphrase what Mike was saying, you know, we are facilitating the journey for the client. So the coaches don't have all the answers. I mean, the coaches may have all the answers, and in some cases, coaching may be advisory. But generally speaking, it's facilitating that process for the client who has to come to their own conclusions and, you know, choose their own paths and set their own accountabilities and things like that. And there's quite a sort of important distinction between something like coaching and, for example, mentoring, where, you know, you might choose a mentor who has a particular expertise or skill in an area that you are trying to develop and who actually may basically tell you what to do in order to get better. But coaching, you know, even just like sports coaches and things like that, you know, we could tell clients what to do, but at the end of the day, you know, whether you are on the tennis court or on the basketball court or you're just at work in life, really you're just there with yourself. So if you don't have those tools to make those things work, then of course it goes without saying that it's very difficult to do. So rather than giving a client the answers, you know, we're facilitating that process to help them come to their own conclusions. The other thing I wanted to pick up on what you said was, you know, the importance of outlining the goals and making measurable goals and putting timelines with them and small steps and things like that. I think it's also really, really important to really think about and articulate your goal. You know, what is your actual goal for achieving this? Why do you even want to do it? I think often we don't necessarily get to the core of what those answers are. And I'm going to go back to the example that I was using before with my client, who, when I asked her why she wants to do this, the first response was, I have a great summer wardrobe that I can't fit into and I want to be able to fit into it. And then almost immediately, without me having to prompt her, she said, actually, you know what, that's not really it. I want to feel healthy. I want to feel energized. And this has always been a part of my life and I feel lost without it. And that, when we dwelled on that for a little, that's a much more powerful motivator than wanting to get into a pair of jeans, I think. I mean, I think it's something that allows a goal to be more sustainable, because if you feel lost without this component in your life and you have the control to bring it into your life, why would you not, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And then there's a feeling, you can kind of tie into the feeling that they felt when they had that, when things were, when, you know, their, let's say their fitness or health and wellness was aligned, and how great they felt, and
yeah,
try and bring them back to that feeling. Also, understanding what worked in the past to them and what might have,
yeah,
changed that's kind of threw them or off course a little bit, to try and get them, you know, a little bit back on track. And, I mean, one thing you said before, you know, with regard to transitioning. You know, it's kind of interesting because, you know, as I coach more and more, I understand how many people are in transitions. I'm in, you know, a bunch of transitions myself. And, you know, the transit, what makes transitions difficult is you kind of have two things going on at once, right? The old you and the new you. And, you know, it takes twice, you know, sometimes it takes twice as much energy if you aren't sort of focused and targeted and, you know, and you know, and in the case of your client, like this is, you know, there's probably a lot of other things going on in their lives that become blocks to them that makes it difficult to make this happen. It's totally understandable. I mean, these, you know, these changes that high, you know, people of high level of awareness try and make, you know, are changes that are usually very monumental. And, you know, having a coach, having a partner, somebody by your side, helping you through is really one way to not only take those baby steps, but as you take those baby steps and kind of chip away at where you're trying to get, you start making these quantum leaps that you would never think were possible. And
right.
I think really that's sort of the power of kind of what we do. And more importantly, the power that these individuals, you know, that we coach have inside of them that they haven't really uncovered yet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
no, I totally agree with that. If you're out there listening to us, you are here with Shiv, Mike, and Dexter. We are talking about small steps to big changes. What does that really mean? And how can you implement change in your life without having to overturn your life completely? So please give us a call. We would love to hear your stories, 646-716-9397. Share your stories with us or even your opinions on the matter. So Dexter, I want to ask you, because I know that you have a particular thought about comfort zones. You know, we always talk about comfort zones and having to go out of our comfort zones in order to make big change and things like that. And I want to get your thoughts on that, because I know you have a particular and quite strong thought when it comes to comfort zones and really pushing those boundaries.
Well, my thoughts, I mean, are sometimes things are going to get a little more comfortable first and foremost. It takes that to stir things up a bit. And so we need to be prepared for that, because there's going to be that moment when we take that first step, like you were saying, when you get up in the morning and you don't do anything, then you'll start to do something, some sort of work to help achieve that goal. You know, when you start taking those first steps to run, you start to feel the burning in your chest and the heaving and your legs want to give out. So you feel uncomfortable. But as long as you know that A, something, going back to something Mike said, having support, you have support, obviously, like you said, to your partner, your husband, or your kid, whoever the case may be, hey, let's all do this together. Let's go for this run together, so that even if I conk out a little bit, I have you there to support me, and I have you there to support me, and I can support you as well. Sorry, guys, I have a bit of a cold. And so we do need to step outside just a bit and get uncomfortable and get unreasonable just a bit and go in deeper and ask ourselves those really important questions. And that will bring some stuff up that we're going to feel uncomfortable with. That's just what life is, things that we have buried down, we don't want to deal with, we don't want to look at. And so once we start to do that and realize that nothing bad will happen, once we look at those things, most of the time, then we can begin to move forward.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's a great point. I mean, we were having a conversation a while ago where we were talking about comfort zones and things like that. And, you know, I loved your take on that, where rather than, you know, this philosophy of rather than going out of your comfort zone, you're actually just increasing the size of your comfort zone. You know, I thought that was a really interesting take on what that really means to you know push your to push the envelope or push your boundaries and things like that.
Again, thinking within a bigger box. We'll always think within a box. Sorry, guys, hold on a second. We'll always have a box in which we think from. No matter what we do, who we are, no matter how liberal we think we are, there's always a box. And the idea is now expanding the box a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger so we have a bigger framework from which we can work. And what that means, like I said, a lot of times when we go to the gym, I find a lot of single people at the gym, just people, not necessarily single, but people doing it alone. Like they're, you know, they're doing whatever it is that they want to do. But if they just thought a little differently, expanded the box and say, if I could include my husband or my wife or my kid, how could I have be part of an activity that is fun, we get to play, and everyone gets to win in this situation. You know, my kids get healthier, I get healthier, I'm having a great time, I get to spend more time with them. And so it increases the box a little bit more and a little bit more. And when we start to think outside of the box in which we use in our daily lives, we'll start to see that things, sort of miracles will start to happen at work. You know, we'll take on more projects, we'll do more things. We'll find ourselves being a little bit more attentive to whomever we need to be, ourselves, our kids, or whomever at work. And we'll go a little bit deeper and we'll start, again, asking those questions as the box begins to expand.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I think it's just changing your attitude about things within your comfort zone and therefore, you know, expanding the boundaries of that and essentially changing your attitude to make yourself more comfortable with what you're taking on. I like the idea of that because I subscribe to the philosophy that it's not actually necessarily the experience, let's say, for example, of going outside of your comfort zone or really pushing yourself that really makes the difference at the end of the day. It's really the learning that you take from that experience that really makes a difference. And as an example, I was talking to a fellow coach about this the other week, and he was saying that, you know, it's when you go outside of your comfort zone, it's a little bit scary. You might not want to do it, but you know, when you do it, and you have that experience and things like that, that's where the richness is. That's where the sweetness is, and that's where the excitement and the resonance and all of that really good stuff lives. So while it feels scary, you know, when you think about what you might be missing out on, that's what it is. And I actually disagreed with him because I was saying, you know, there are many times in my own experience, and I'm sure we've all had these experiences, where I've really gone out of my comfort zone, and actually I haven't enjoyed the experience. You know, there was no sweetness there, there was no richness. But I think it certainly, if I looked at it from the angle of, okay, what did I really learn? And maybe I learned about myself that I don't enjoy going to this particular kind of environment to do this. You know, that in itself is a welcome learning, because I think, you know, to put this in the context, I think a lot of the times, and I will use myself as an example because I won't assume this about everyone else, but, you know, I think especially in my younger days, I might feel very guilty about not doing something because I feel that I should and I feel that it's going to be really good for me and things like that. And quite often I took that experience on, and sometimes it was amazing and I was very glad that I did it, but sometimes I did it and I kind of lived without it, or I wished I hadn't. But I think the learning there is you know, to dispense with the word should and to, you know, eradicate that feeling of guilt and just sort of really focus in on what am I trying to get out of this? What is the core goal? And if it seems like if that's really what's driving me and motivating me, great, then do it. And to go back to Mike's point before, you know, the experience you're having is neutral. The way that you react to it is what's important. But I wanted to know what you guys thought about that. You know, I think there is this idea that when you really go out of your comfort zone, then it's a lot of people will always say it's always really good for you to do that. And I guess my question is it always really good to do that in terms of the experience you're having? Or is it really about the what you learn about yourself or about what you've taken on that, that's really important?
Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, go ahead, Dexter. No, you go.
It's about the experience, your experience and what you learn. At the end of the day, everything we do is about what we learn about ourselves, what we can and can't handle, and did we expand from that situation? Because every situation is a situation where stepping outside of your comfort zone is an opportunity to grow, you know? And that's what you were saying, every event is neutral, and how you perceive it is what makes it what it is. And so we have to take the opportunity to always step back in the most uncomfortable situations and ask yourself, what did I learn from this particular situation at this point in time? And that's how we continue to grow as people. So that's how I see it.
See, I think this is an excellent question, something that should be on a lot of people's minds. I think it's on probably everybody's mind. When people are kind of going outside their comfort zone and something just doesn't feel right for them. And Shiv, I thought you brought up an excellent point where you mentioned that you went outside your comfort zone and the experience wasn't a good experience. It's kind of in fact, an unpleasant experience. For me, I've spent I went through the coaching program, and through my certification, you go through a lot of hours of coaching and as well as being coached. And sometimes a lot of the self-awareness, a lot of what you learn, a lot of what I learned through the process was more about what I uncovered about myself. And when you talk about going outside your comfort zone, oftentimes, at least for me, it's doing something that doesn't really resonate with me, isn't aligned with who I am, and the reason it's uncomfortable is because, for me, my intuition or my gut, or you know this inner kind of voice that we have, is telling me that this isn't me. This is not really kind of what I want. And I get that there are definitely some benefits to going outside your comfort zone, obviously. But we, like from my perspective, what I like to do is I want people to operate within their comfort zone because what they're doing is more aligned with who they are and where they want to be. Because if we're pushing the limits a little bit and raising the bar to get more out of them, just like a coach may push a track star to kind of push a little harder, that's one thing. But if the track star wants to be the fastest guy in the world, and that's aligned with what he wants to do, even though he's being pushed, it's still something that's comfortable for him or her because it's aligned with what their goals are and who they are authentically. So, I'm in a little bit of a career transition and just trying to understand a little bit more about what I want out of my career and what aligns with me. And I'm in sales, and it's intimidating sometimes, and pushing the limit in sales has, great rewards. But if you are if it's that uncomfortable where you're pushing the limits to the point that it doesn't feel good, then to me it sort of defeats a little bit of the purpose of what we serve. And in my opinion, it's trying to find out what the person really loves to do, what aligns with them, where do they want to be, and pushing them a little bit, I guess, out of their comfort zone, but still in the context of a bigger goal of where they want to be what their goals are and what truly aligns with them authentically. And I think this goes for, you know, and I think this goes for, you know, a lot of things. So once you discuss comfort zone and pushing somebody outside of their comfort zone, you're talking about a bad feeling that they have in their stomach or their gut or their intuition is telling them, hey, I don't really want to do this. And I don't know if that's, at least that's, and I kind of get, you know, there are a lot of ways to interpret that. But to me, that's how I interpret it. And I want to push my clients and raise the bar for them, but in the context of their goals, what they want to do, and where, you know, what aligns with them most as individuals, as spiritual beings, as, you know, as people with high levels of awareness just trying to get to the next level or a different place than where they are. So what is that?
Right.
How does that sound for you? I mean,
yeah, I think it's an interesting debate. I mean, you can sort of play both sides of the fence, and you know, something that you just mentioned stuck with me, which is about the sort of interpretation of that feeling that you might have when you are about to, you know, push yourself a little and maybe go out of your comfort zone and do something that's a little bit unfamiliar. And I'm not sure whether this is exactly what you meant, but, you know, I think that's something that's worth talking about a little bit, because, you know, when we are in that situation, we're going through something unfamiliar, there are all these different feelings that we're contending with, right? And some of them are unpleasant, you know, we feel nervous, all this sort of thing, whatever. There's probably excitement in there as well. You know, how do you accurately interpret what that is, right? You know, are you intuiting
right.
that this is something that you shouldn't be doing? Or actually, you know, because, I mean, it goes without saying that sometimes when you do push yourself and you go out of your comfort zone, maybe you learn about yourself that you like to do something you hadn't done before. Maybe that changes the goals that you have. And maybe for that track star who didn't have the goal of being the fastest sprinter in the world or fastest track star in the world, maybe going to their first couple of meets and getting that adrenaline and winning, maybe that changed that goal for that track star,
right?
Right.
Right.
So how do we deal with that in terms of especially helping clients who are going to be going through these feelings when we are working with them and maybe pushing them and encouraging them and things like that. How do we work with them to really explore what those feelings mean?
Right.
I think we have a caller on the line, guys. Let me just go to see if somebody is going to join us. Hi, do we have a caller? Did someone just dial into the call?
Oh, sorry. I think someone was calling in to listen.
Okay, maybe.
Yeah, because someone was asking, they couldn't find us online. I gave them the number to.
Maybe. Okay, so
that's a great point that you're making in terms of, if you didn't explore the opportunity of being the track star and push that person to at least go to those first few meets, they would have never known that they loved doing track. And
right.
the opportunities that it would have created, you know, for them as an individual. And obviously we're using track for, it's just a simple analogy, but it could be anything in life. So it is an excellent point with going outside your comfort zone in terms of saying, you know, hey, I'm going to do something that, you know, I thought I would have never done and explore that opportunity and see what's out there for me.
And I guess what I'm asking is, or what I would like to discuss is, you know, as coaches, often these feelings come up in our clients, especially when we are pushing them to unfamiliar territory. And often, for people out there who are listening to us right now, we refer to that in many ways, one of which is the saboteur. So, you know, a client saboteur who is there, the little devil, let's say, on the shoulder, who is encouraging them not to do something, or, you know, sort of actively discouraging them to do something. And that can be for any number of reasons at all. So what kind of advice do you guys have for clients, or even for any of our listeners out there, when they're going through that stage and contending with those feelings, to deal with that little gremlin, with that saboteur?
Well, one of the things I always tell people in the group coaching that I do is, what is your commitment? Like, are you sticking to those commitments? Are you committed to having this happen? And if you are, there are going to be some prices to pay, and there are going to be all kinds of feelings that will come up. At every step of the way, you're going to feel this, you're going to feel that. And a lot of times, it's those feelings that come up that we listen to, that we always didn't go along with, that a lot of times kept us from getting to where we needed to be. So now we just need to get committed 100%. It's easier to be at 100% than it is to be at 99%. So we're 100% committed to get to go forward. Another thing you can do is, alongside with that, is what is the thought behind the thought? So you have the thought, oh my God, I'm scared. Well, what's behind that? What's the thing that's really driving that I'm scared? There's something. Your fear of, let's say, rejection from your mom. Your fear of, you know, or you remember when you were 5 years old and you did this particular thing, and then X happened, something terrible happened. So now you're sort of living out of that story over and over and over and over and over again. And, but you come up with the idea or the story now that, oh, I'm just afraid, I'm just nervous, I'm too old, or whatever the case may be. You have all these thoughts, not really feelings, but thoughts about the situation. And so if you get committed and you ask yourself, what's the thought behind the thought? I think for me, I've seen that being like a driving force for getting people to move forward. So that's one of the things that I think.
Yeah, and actually I love that. I think that's a really great point, because, you know, often the initial thought around saboteurs or gremlins and things like that is that they, you know, they don't want us to succeed. You know, they don't want us to achieve. They don't want us to try anything new or to grow or experience. And, you know, actually, guys, that's not necessarily true. You know, sometimes your saboteur is there to protect you. You know, do you really want to make yourself vulnerable when you know what the consequences of doing that might be, for example, in a romantic relationship? So I think, to your point, Dexter, it's really important to understand what's really behind that. And it's not always necessarily, you know, it's not always necessarily a negative slant. But I think from there, you know, one thing I always love to ask my clients when they have identified a goal, you know, they have said that they're committed, and then they do have this fear and you find out what's behind it, you know, what do you lose by not having this in your life? You know, you say that you really want this, you say that you're committed to doing it, you can visualize what that looks like and how much better your life will be. So what do you lose by not having that? And I often think that's a question that really gets clients thinking and sort of reinforces their commitment to something that they have outlined as a goal.
I think that's a great question. I mean, one of the questions and one of the I ask myself and coaches have asked me is, what's the downside? Sometimes we agonize over these decisions and over these things that we want to do or want to accomplish or want to try. And we have this internal voice, like you said, this, you know, gremlin inside our head telling us, you know, we can't do it or we shouldn't do it. And it's based on years and years of, you know, input from family, friends, kind of trying, you know, not necessarily, I guess beating down is maybe a little bit strong, but, you know, kind of little by little, squeezing the courage or the
chipping away
out of
it,
yeah, you know, and like a lot of times you think like, you know, what should I do, blah, 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 and when you ask yourself the question, well, what's the downside of doing that? You know, what's the downside? so many times I'll ask my clients that question, and they'll be like, there really is no downside. And the reason that's so empowering is because all of a sudden this concept of, hey, I'm going so far out of my comfort zone because everybody's looking at the risks associated with decisions or what may happen. And when they identify the downside of, hey, there really is none, all of a sudden they're like, yeah, you know what, I'm going to try that. And all of a sudden it becomes they're going in it with a positive, you know, kind of positive action, as opposed to this self-doubt and this gremlin kind of clawing back at them, telling them they can't do it, to,
right,
hey, there's no downside. And no matter what the experience, and kind of what we talked about a little bit earlier in the call, is no matter what the outcome is, it's a learning experience, and I'm still exactly where I'm supposed to be, you know?
Right.
Because every step of the way, you're exactly where you're supposed to be. And, you know, these changes, I mean, it's you know, these changes take energy, you know, like some of these major changes in our lives, whether it's career changes or changes in relationships. Let's say you're in a bad marriage, you want to make it better, or a bad marriage, you want to get out of it, or you want to lose 20 pounds, or, you know, whatever it might be. There's a lot of energy around these, around all of these changes. Some good and not so good, and sometimes there's, you know, they look like monumental changes, and when you boil it down, you ask yourself the question, what's the downside? You're like, well, there is no downside. There's only upside. It's like, okay, well, what's holding you back? Well, nothing now. So all of a sudden, they're back in their comfort zone, you know?
Yeah.
And you,
yeah.
So to me, that's kind of, you know, what I think you were asking the question, you kind of asked it, you know, what do you lose? You know, oftentimes people really don't lose anything. The thought of what they might lose is holding them back, but when they sit down and think about it, they're like, I don't really lose anything. I got everything to gain. And boom, it triggers in their head, and they're off and running doing it.
Right, right. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I like, you know, this idea of really, really understanding what is behind the fear. You know, what is there that's really holding somebody back? Because quite often, you know, I have noticed this in coaching relationships with clients and things like that. When they get to a state of fear, or sometimes they laugh at a question or something like that, or they feel, you know, quite fearful when you're going down this path, you know that there's actually something really meaty there. You know that that's the verge of change, right? There's something there which, if they can, conquer or work through, probably will lead to some kind of breakthrough for them. So, you know, I do like this idea of looking behind the sort of mask of fear and seeing what really is driving that. And I think, you know, that's why it's difficult to do that on your own. You know, I think unless you're incredibly self-aware, it's hard to do that. But that's why, you know, guys out there listening, that's why there are coaches. That's why we are here. You know, we're here to help facilitate that process and ask those right questions, which hopefully point you towards some really fruitful answers. So I want to just do a little recap, because our topic is small steps to big changes. So what does that really mean? How can you institute them, and how can you make it sustainable and keep to your commitment? So I think we've talked about some really good stuff, guys. You know, the idea of really identifying a goal that really resonates with you and speaks to you, and then making it measurable, you know, putting a timeline around it, you know, making yourself accountable. And even if you don't have a coach, you know, there are lots of ways that you can make yourself accountable these days. You know, you can do it to friends. I know a girl who, again, wanted to get really fit and would use Facebook as her as her quote unquote accountability coach. You know, she would post on there every day and things like that after she had done her exercise and things like that. And she noticed that when she wasn't posting something like that, all of her friends would be saying, "What happened today?" So my point is that there are plenty of ways to institute that accountability. So really identifying that core goal and you know, putting some measures of success around it in terms of what would you gain, what would you lose by not doing it, and things like that. And something I love to tell my clients actually is to write out that goal. You know, make a big poster out of it, or you know, stick it up somewhere prominent so that it's always in your mind and brings you back to why you are engaging this process and implementing this change. So I think that's a very you know, a very good point to make. And then starting with really small steps. I mean, everything starts with a thought, right, guys? You know, and it's thought plus intention. And you know, actually, maybe that's the change equation, right? Thought plus intention equals change. Maybe that's actually just what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, I guess you have, you know, a few minutes left, and I don't know if anybody else, if anybody wants to call in on anything specific that we'd, you know, love to address in the last few minutes, but one of the things that I'd like to touch on just before we end, if it's okay, is a lot of times, you know, we talk about life coaching, versus transition coaching or wellness coaching or relationship coaching. When we think about life coaching, there are many aspects to all of our lives. There's, you know, there's finances, there's family, there's personal development, you know, relationships, fun and enjoyment. And what's been interesting for me in my sort of self-development work, as well as the experience I've had with my clients, is sometimes just one aspect of our lives is out of whack, but yet it influences all other aspects. As an example, mm-hmm. let's say that you've been somebody, you know, health and wellness is something that's always near and dear to us. If you've all of a sudden always been in good shape and you find yourself over the last year, you put on weight, you stopped exercising, you're not eating healthy, maybe you're over drinking or drinking excessively, any of these things that you might have done in the past but maybe controlled it and now they've sort of gotten out of control, all those, that one aspect of your life, even though it's just sort of, we'll define it as, let's say, you know, health and wellness, that's going to spill over into maybe job satisfaction. It could spill over to your satisfaction with relationships. It could have a whole lot of other influence on all of those other important aspects of your life. Another example for me that's personal to me is just being in the right job. There's been a lot of job dissatisfaction with what I've been doing over the past, my last 25 years in a career in finance. And that really, having a career that hasn't really aligned well with where I am now in my life has really changed, you know, has really impacted many other areas of my life, you know. So relationships are, you know, there's more stress. So, you know, your relationships are, you know, sometimes, you know, on rocky ground, even though they're relatively strong, loving relationships. So one tool that I use with my clients is called the Wheel of Life, and it mm-hmm. basically is just that. It's a wheel with 8 categories on it, numbered 1 to 10, with 1 being sort of less satisfied and 10 being most satisfied. And basically what you do is you go around the wheel and circle the number, let's say from, you know, how do you feel about your career and your profession on a scale of 1 to 10. Your personal finances on a scale of 1 to 10. And what it does is it reveals to coaches, do they have, you know, all threes, which means it's a real small circle, and it has the potential to grow to 7, 8, 9 across all those different parts of our lives? Or are they kind of like 8s and 9s all around the wheel, and, you know, you look at the wellness part of it, and it's a 2. And it allows us to zero in on the parts of, you know, it has allowed me to zero in on individuals, where they are, and where they probably need, you know, in need of the most change, and that basically helps the entire, you know, their entire lives. So what I would, you know, kind of caution our listeners to do is, you know, not to make drastic changes because maybe one aspect of our lives is out of place, impacting a lot of other, impacting all these other facets of our lives, and explore that with a coach or somebody who's, you know, you can really open up to, and see if you could get a little bit more balance or expand,
right,
like we talked about before, expand the possibilities and empower yourself to do things that you probably might have, you know, thought you couldn't do, but all of a sudden the coach helps them become obtainable and you're able to reach those goals. So the Wheel of Life is a very simple tool, eye-opening tool, and I could email that to any listener who's interested in going over it with me. And I guess we could share our contact information, you know, in the last couple of minutes of the call if you guys want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, so I think that's a great point, right? I mean, there is a certain perception that in order to make change in your life, you have to overturn your entire life, right? You know, do you have to completely overhaul everything in order to see significant change in your life? And, you know, essentially what we are saying to anyone out there who is listening, that's not true, right? And I think the point that you're making, Mike, is a very good starting point for people to really identify and think about what is working in their lives right now in terms of these different age segments and what is not. And, you know, the one that's working less well, let's say, on that scale of 1 to 10, maybe that is just the first thing to start with, but that doesn't mean you need to change absolutely everything else, that these other components might speak to in your life. You just need to focus on that one little thing. So I think that's a good point. So we have a couple of minutes, guys, for closing statements and things like that. I guess, you know, we can share our information and things as well. But Dexter, let's start with you. Closing comments, thoughts?
Well, my closing thoughts are, at every moment of every day, choose to live your highest, best, most beautiful, most outrageous self. And that way you get to constantly grow, constantly shift, and expand your being so that the people around you can also grow and be more than that they are each day.
That's great. And Dexter, for anyone out there listening who wants to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
They can reach me by email. It's Dexter Cicero, Cicero spelled C-I-C-E-R-O, @gmail.com.
Great. Mike, closing thoughts for you in 1 minute?
Yeah, I think Dexter summarized it really well. I think, everybody out there should just know that there's a tremendous opportunity and potential out there, and that you have the answers inside already. It's just with the help of a good coach that you like really resonate with and build a real solid trusting relationship with to really help you pull it out. And the fact that you're on this call tells me that you already have a level of awareness that, you know, is, you know, out, you know, a level of awareness that already puts you ahead of a lot of people who may have those same feelings but aren't ready to make those changes. So
right.
I would just say that you'd basically tap that potential. and, you know, hopefully you could find a great coach that aligns with you and help you make those changes. And
how can people get hold of you if they want to get hold of you, Mike?
The best way to get in touch with me is through email, to start, m.giasi, G-I-A-S-I. So it's m.giasi, G-I-A-S-I at AOL.com. And for anybody interested in chatting, to get to know me, you know, we could do a quick 15 to 30 minute free introductory session and, you know, see if we could, you know, develop a dialogue and a relationship that would be beneficial for you.
That sounds great. That sounds great. Thank you very much, guys. Anyone out there who's listening, you've been listening to Mike Giasi, Dexter Cicero, and Shiv Paul talking about small steps to big changes. Intention plus thoughts equals change, guys. And I guess in my closing comments, I will echo what my fellow coaches have said, to really explore your potential. And hopefully we've given you a few easy ways to figure out where to start, whether it's using the Wheel of Life or whether it's really sitting down, you know, with a big sheet of paper and a big highlighter and putting down some thoughts onto that paper about what your particular goal is that you want to achieve. Really delving into that, making it measurable, making yourself accountable, and then figuring out a bunch of little steps that can lead you to your bigger goal. And as the guys have said, of course, I'm a little biased, but it is much easier to do that with a coach or with somebody rather than doing it on your own. And so if you want to get hold of any of the guys, or even if you want to get hold of me, my practice is called Authentic Life Rules, and you can go to my website, which is authenticliferules.com, and you can get in touch with me there. So thank you very much, Mike Dexter. It's been a pleasure having this discussion with you. Anyone out there who's been listening, we hope that you have found this as rich and fruitful as we have, and we look forward to being on the air with you again soon.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Good night, guys. Thank you.